Welcome to episode 166 of Terrorvision Horror Podcast, our more relaxed fit episode. I'm one of your hosts, Jennifer Strand, and joining me is my favourite limb collector, Dan McGuinness.
Hello.
Hello, hello. What you been doing?
I bought a little while back the book, the novel of Garth Marenghi's Terror Tone.
Yes.
And if you don't know what Garth Marenghi is, or who he is, it was a show, like one of those BBC shows with all those like, comedians, like Richard Ayoade, you can hardly say his last name, and Matt Berry, and I can't remember where I played Garth Marenghi now.
No, I couldn't tell you right now.
And Garth Marenghi is the main character, and he's like a horror writer, like as the character. He's this horror writer, and he's like, you know, full of himself, and it's just hilarious. He thinks he's amazing, and he's like actually just really like misogynistic and horrible. But they'd made this show called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, where he, as Garth Marenghi, made a TV show about his novel. So it's a really meta kind of like,
yeah,
kind of thing. And, you know, it's funny because like, you know, they're actors acting as actors and acting badly, which is always real hard.
Yeah.
And he brought out recently Terror Tome, which is like written by, it says it's just written by Garth Marenghi. Like it's not even written by the actor, it says. And he, yeah, so it's basically like the Books of Blood where it's like the short stories. And it's fucking genius.
Mm.
Like, and I bought the book. I never read it.
Yeah.
Because that's just what I do. I
buy novels. You bought me the book too.
Yeah, I bought you the book. Yeah. And you probably never read it.
And I haven't read it yet.
And it's like a big hardcover. And I saw recently that it's there's an audiobook version of it. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I saw it's narrated by Garth Marenghi.
Yeah.
So it's not even narrated, I didn't say his real name. It's Garth Marenghi. He's his character that he never breaks. You know what I mean? One of those people.
Yeah.
So Garth Marenghi narrates his own book and it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's so much better than reading it. Like, because my wife was reading the actual novel and like when I explained the scenes, how he did them, he's like, yeah, you really want that.
Yeah.
You want to hear him. Like read
it pops better coming from him.
Yeah, because he says them in the way.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, if he's doing a misogynistic way, he says it in a way that like it works as his character.
Yeah,
and it's so funny and it's so good. And the idea of like acting like that level of like acting. So someone acting as someone who's a writer who's acting. So he's right. Then his writing has to be like the character that he's writing from. But then he has to do it bad. But he's also writing horror stories, which are good horror stories. But they also have to have, and I'm like, the level of comedy and complexity and talent it will take to do that. And he did like whole book tours around the UK as Garth Marenghi for the book and shit. Like, it's just such a thing.
Yeah. Right?
So, Garth Marenghi's Terror Tome audiobook. And there's a second one as well called Incarnate or something like that, which is more, it's so worth listening to.
Yep.
Like, get on to it.
Yeah, I've been listening to some audiobooks myself because I don't actually have time to sit and read. All of my time that I listen is commute time. Mm.
Same.
So now I'm maybe 2 hours out of a novel, and once I've done that, I'll jump onto Garth Marenghi.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
What have you been doing apart from that?
What haven't I been doing? So I watched Immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the new religious horror Sydney Sweeney movie. Everyone banging on about Sydney Sweeney. I didn't watch Euphoria. I have no idea who she is. And I also watched The First Omen. And these two films are pretty much one in the same.
Like Damien, or is it called The First Omen?
It's called The First Omen.
It's not The First Omen film?
No. It's The First Omen. So this is the story of how Damien came to be.
Oh, so it is Damien. So it's an actual Omen film.
Oh, yeah. So it ties in. It's a prequel.
Yeah.
Both of them have the same concept in which an American girl comes to another country and is taking her vows in a convent and, you know, becomes pregnant with the devil.
Wow.
If you will. Wow. Now, Immaculate, I would say, probably had the slightly better storyline, but The First Omen really kills it with the cinematography. Like it is really well done. We get a lot of effects that are really subtle creepy, and then we've got some that are just like full blown, oh my god, that's just a bit weird. Both quite good. Wouldn't really fault them too much. Like, probably worth a watch. And I also checked out Late Night with the Devil again. I did see it. Well, I saw it last year for the Adelaide Film Festival, and it's just gotten a cinematic release, proper cinematic release this year. As most of you might remember, it was my favorite film of last year and is still gearing up to be my favorite film of this year. I actually saw this
and I was like, oh, what's that? It's got a really high rating and it's a horror film. And then I didn't get it because I kind of looked into it a bit and I went, oh, is that a horror film? Or maybe it was a documentary. And I didn't bother pursuing it or any of that.
Yeah.
But now I...
Well, it hits Shudder. I think it's hitting Shudder today. So it's definitely worth checking out. I know there's a lot of controversy around it, and the use of AI. And I think that while we're having the AI conversation...
What do you mean?
So this film was done...
It's set in 1977. There shouldn't be any AI in it.
No. However, because this is like a TV series, they use a couple of like cutaway, like we'll be right backs. Those images were apparently generated by AI. And this film was made...
as in like AI art stuff.
Yes.
As in like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So rather than bring,
an artist to come in and do a cool thing, they just fucking yeah. That's not heaps cool, but
I know that there's a big thing about AI art, and I'm not I'm not defending
around
it.
Not around it enough to have an opinion.
No, but I mean, I've got a lot of artist friends, and I would hate to see them lose out on things because of AI, but. This film was made a couple of years ago. So this film was made before the conversation of AI really got big and before the SAG issue and before everything back when, and again, people will come back at me and be like, well, you should always know better. But it was back when they didn't know better. It's a low budget Australian film. So many people are boycotting it. So many people are not.
How do they know that it was?
I think something got let slip along
the
way.
Or they just said it because they didn't think it was a problem.
The filmmakers. How
weird is that? And funny. Yeah.
So they've addressed it, and you know, they might change it before it gets a physical release. They might do some other artists, but the film's getting review bombed. And people are boycotting it, and all the reviews are like, I'd like this if it wasn't for the AI art.
I'd like this if it wasn't for the internet telling me what not to like, and I don't have an opinion about stuff.
I just feel that a lot of people are hating on this film.
For the wrong
reasons. You're hating on an independent artist that you should be supporting because they're an independent artist. But because everyone's kicking up this stink about a couple of images used... Like, and again, being that I'm not in that industry,
what about the,
and
the
I'm
starting
not around
of that Secret Invasion show for Marvel? The whole starting is AI.
Oh, really?
Generated video with, you know, that weird, you know, that, because, you know.
I never watched it.
You know, the scrolls and they can change. So they use that. And Claire's like, they wouldn't have used AI. They would have used an algorithm to look like the AI, to play on it, because like, there's no way they'd use AI. Look, they just use the AI.
Yeah.
So they've just basically, Disney just copyrighted, like, everyone, they just, like,
yeah,
crazy. And I'm I didn't hear anyone caring about that.
No.
And they used for the opening of the show, so it's in there over and over again, and it's just millions and millions of AI-created video, as in, like, still shots that are made into, like, basically animation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they care that these people use, and that's now when we know about the AI, they did that.
Mm.
And now people are caring because the film, when AI was just coming out and they hadn't really thought about it and hadn't complained about it, and they put it in their film, but they had the argument, why didn't they put it in there? And I'm like, because probably by the time the film got cut and released, it still wasn't a problem.
Yeah, because it did like circuits before
yourself.
It
review
got released.
Review bombing is like so fucking dumb.
Well, Fallout,
cancel culture is the worst.
And yeah, like I don't want to start arguments with anyone about AI because obviously I don't know enough about it. I'm not an artist. I don't have an interaction where it's not affecting me.
I don't like it.
But
I also don't like cancel culture.
I just feel that, you know, we're now shitting on a small independent movie because people are being told to, kind of thing.
People want to do. People love, they can only live if people tell them what to do.
In saying that, I also watched Fallout. Liz made me watch.
Yeah, I want to watch
all
that.
Of Fallout, which does not have any AI art, but it is also got review bombed because video game nerds are the fucking worst.
Oh, really?
Video game. Yeah, oh, yeah. They were like, it's not the canon. It's not fucking the lore. Blah blah. I don't know. As someone who doesn't play Fallout, and I was the only one playing Fallout 76 for a while there, I quite enjoyed it. It was funny. I got a lot of gore. I got a lot of everything out of it. Yeah. So.
Well, Brayden, who I work with, has played all the Fallout games.
Yeah.
He loved it. He did like you. Like, three people I know have watched it have all said they watched it in one day, the entire series.
Yeah. I could have probably watched it over a couple of days, but Liz was adamant we were watching it in one sitting.
So, was it 8 hours?
Yeah, too long.
Yeah, right.
Too long. So that's what I've been doing. I've just been sort of consuming a lot of media. I finished my audiobook called Come With Me, which was written by Ronald Malfi. It was released in 2021. So it's about this guy who his wife dies. She gets shot in a shooting, as you do, in a shopping center, which is a little bit close to home right now. And he finds in the house that her hope chest has now got a padlock on it. He doesn't know how long that's been on there. He breaks in and he finds this file full of police cases, news articles about these girls that have been killed. And he basically goes on this journey to sort of find out what she was doing, why she was doing it, why she was hiding it from him, and, you know, see if he can kind of track down the killer. It reminds me of that movie called Brick with Joseph Gordon-Levitt that was released a bunch of years ago, which was also really good. So yeah, that's what I've been consuming. But enough about what I've been consuming. Let's talk about threequels. Threequels and trilogies. So coming off of Beyond Reanimator, the third installment of the series, we thought we would discuss the third installment to a franchise or the final in a trilogy.
Now these are like, they don't have to be the best. These aren't our favorites. These are just...
Some of these are pretty favored, but yeah, like...
Because it's actually hard to find enough film franchises where the third one is the best film.
Yeah, I mean, there are a set, like, maybe 5 to 10 of them where everyone, and they're all on the list and they're everywhere, but, you know, I think also a lot of the time this is where we fandoms drop off. Like, if the second one wasn't that good, we're less inclined to go for the third.
Because you're saying, like, after a trilogy, it becomes a franchise.
Yeah.
They're usually kind of thing. So a trilogy is a thing.
Mm.
And then, you know, you don't have a franchise of 2 movies. You don't have a franchise of 3 movies. But as soon as it's a 4, it becomes a franchise or some shit like that.
You got more going on for it. So
that's probably not, you know, etched in stone, that rule, but it seems to be
pretty
rule of thumb-y.
Yeah. Did you want to kick off your first one?
Yep. So my first one, because I found it hard to, like, find a third film in a series that I'd watched all three that I liked more than the other two.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say one I didn't like as much, and I'm going to do Alien 3 from 1992.
Yep.
So, because I liked Resurrection as well.
I remember watching that in 1997. I don't really remember too much more about it, but.
It's like Jean-Pierre Jeanette, whatever you say his name. So he did films like, I remember when I was growing up, he did like City of Lost Children, and then he did Delicatessen, and then he did Emily, which everyone seems to know Emily.
Yeah, everyone knows Emily. A lot
over that one.
Yeah.
But like Delicatessen and City of Lost Children, like real style of film. And of course, like he uses like the same people throughout his film. So and Alien Resurrection had those people in it. So
yeah.
They're kind of those French weird, almost body horror actors they've got in there, his stuff. But yeah, Alien 2. Alien 2 is 3, sorry. Alien 3's got that weird thing where everyone's like, I hate it. No, it's good. No, I love it. No, that's great. You know what I mean? Like,
It's the Halloween 3 all over again.
Yeah, like, what? Nah, I don't think it's that good.
Because everyone hated Halloween 3 up until a few years back. Okay. I'm so sorry.
And, See, I loved, as a young person, I was disappointed at Alien 3, I remember, because it wasn't Aliens, which I think is still one of the best films ever made, alongside Gremlins and Ghostbusters, which is weird. just didn't have that as much action in it that I needed.
Yep.
And I can tell, like, that, you know, they're going back to Alien, like the vibe of Alien, you know, one xenomorph and they had a whole bunch of people set in the prison. The thing I didn't like about straight away is that they killed off the characters that survived the film before. Mm. The whole point was like Ripley went back to get the characters and it was a massive thing. So it made the end of Aliens moot.
Yeah.
They just killed off in the first scene. I think they killed off Newt and they killed off Hicks. And there was also the cybernetic person, which Lance Hendrickson, which they kind of bring him back a little bit in there. And they crashed him on a prison planet, had the whole thing where she shaves her head and, you know, Sinead O'Connor's it and stuff like that. And, yeah, people just didn't like it.
Yep.
Yeah. And, but, yeah, I was just saying, it has, like, the most famous aliens meme in it of her, like, holding her head sideways with the fucking the alien with the tongue coming out. But it has, like, in my opinion, one of the best aliens in it.
Mm.
Like, I don't know what it's called, what its name was, but, like, the dog alien, which was, like, so sleek and, like, good-looking and fast and, like, skin-coloured instead of black or whatever it was. And that was really good. Like, that alien I was obsessed with kind of thing. It's like, good alien. But, yeah, it just didn't... I just think because it's in a prison planet and so many of the characters were just, like, so unredeemable and not likable and... I know, it's weird, like, why it didn't work.
Yeah. Well, I think
it does have the best fuck in any film, though.
Really?
Yeah, if you look it up, there's a bit like when they're in the cafeteria scene and, like, the alien's tail comes around and takes someone up and everyone goes silent and just look and this one dude just goes like... Fuck! And it's a really big, long fuck. And it's one of the best fucks.
Yeah.
Like, you could have...
See, I've not watched this film. It was just one of those films that I'd kind of missed and I'd never went to. And then because every time you go to watch it with someone, they're like, oh, it's the worst one. Let's not watch it. And you go, okay, fine.
Well, I always, like, go to talk about it and then people are like, that's Alien Resurrection. That's Alien Resurrection. Okay,
sure.
That's Alien Resurrection.
Well, this is directed by David Fincher. And
yeah, that's crazy.
It is ranked as the worst David Fincher film. However, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that when he came on to do Alien 3, he was actually just doing music videos and he was brought in after Vincent Ward left. So he basically had to pick up the pieces and this was his first, like, this is like his major directorial debut.
Oh, really?
So there were just issues to begin with. I think it
does have that Fincher-y kind of like, rustiness to it. You know, these films are all rusty. You know, they look like they're rusty. Probably Zodiac look amazing.
Yeah, everything about Zodiac is amazing.
Yeah, like, now that I know that, because apparently they were like, it was supposed to be like vastly different.
Yeah.
Like, for a start, it gets into a dog in the movie, and it was supposed to get into a, like, I think it's original script or something, it was supposed to get into a, like, a bull or a, like, cattle, like the cattle that were part of the food for the prisoners.
Yeah.
So it had this, like, alien with horns and stuff and, like, charged and...
Yeah.
And, apparently. That never happened.
Yep.
But, yeah, so Alien, like, it was that kind of thing. Like, that could have been a franchise killer, but it clearly didn't because, like, then fucking, like, Alien Resurrection came out with all its weird ideas and people didn't like that either.
And, well, that came out, like, 5 years later or something
it
as
had,
well.
It had, like, CG in it and stuff with aliens swimming underwater, but it had all the cool stuff, like, I remember she's like a clone in that thing, and they brought her back.
Mm.
So the vibe, if I'm remembering the right film, she's a clone. They cloned her, but they cloned her from the point of when she still had an alien in her from Alien 3.
Yep.
So she dies at the end of Alien 3 with she kind of like, she survives because she's got an alien in her. Like she gets chest, but like face hugged. And that alien won't kill her because you don't kill until the things come out. And it's a queen in her as well. So, and then she ends up like Terminator 2-ing, diving into a molten lava pit just as it bursts out and she holds it into her.
Yeah.
And like hugs it. And yeah, and that, so they clone her from that point where she still has, so they clone her in with you know, future tech.
Mm.
The clone has the egg in her still. So the company, the corporation wants to bring them back and use them as bioweapons and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's super far in the future.
Yep.
And, yeah, they bring her back And they, yeah, there's all bits where she goes into the lab where they have failed versions of herself, cloning, and they're all fucked up versions. Just cool stuff like that.
Yeah.
Science. Got Winona Ryder in it.
Well, it's been a, like, I probably haven't seen it since 1997. So all I remember is Winona Ryder's in it and that she was an android.
Dude,
and
it's got fucking Ron Perlman in it. Like, that's shit you have to remember.
Yep.
And Sigourney Weaver.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, yeah, it's a weird one because it's got that real, Alien Resurrection had a very strange alien. If I remember, it dies in a horrible way. And it, like, because she kind of has, it won't kill her in Resurrection. She's like the clone, but they've taken the queen out of her. So she's like one that's got that weird vibe that she was a host, but she's alive still.
Yep.
And so she's got this, like, weird motherly thing with it, kind of. And at the end, like, it's quite sad. Like, it ends up, like, getting fucking pulled through a hole, like, the size of a 10-cent piece into space because it gets sucked onto the thing. And the fucking, the extended cut, the gore version of it, that, like, it's not in the original version that they've got online that shows, like, the whole scene of that thing getting sucked through is fucking full on.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty good. And, like, yeah, just, that's my first film.
Yep, okay.
That's all a thriller. Right. And, you know, there's lots of films out there where, you know, I'm trying to say a horror film, that, you know, the third installment. It's a hard one, but that's one I wanted to speak about because of, like, it's weird.
Mm.
It's like, oh, Alien 3 is shit. But, like, there hasn't been many good Alien films since the, that Redux when, like, Aliens and Predator and all that shit came in. Like,
yeah.
Prometheus, all that, the new Aliens film, I mean, Covenant, none of them have been as good as Alien 3.
Mm.
Like, so that's saying something.
Yeah, and
I've... And no film is as good as Aliens. In my opinion, it's like one of the best films ever made, I think. It still looks real.
Yeah.
There's nothing in that film where you go, like, that guy's not a soldier.
Mm.
That guy's not acting as this. They're all just who they are. You just believe them. Good acting, fucking crazy effects.
Yes, like, as much as I dislike James Cameron, it is a very good film.
Yeah, I don't like James Cameron, but, you know.
Yeah.
Did he do the first one?
No. Ridley Scott did the first one.
That's right, yeah.
I think James Cameron had some kind of hand in it, but I don't. Who cares? It's fucking James Cameron. All right. Yeah. Well, going off of your first one that is not great but needed a little defending, I'm going to talk about Scream 3.
Yeah.
2000, directed by Wes Craven.
Is that the one everyone likes? Or is that 4?
No. No one likes 3, except for Brandon, the Nether Noose, I apologize. He'll defend that, and good for him. Proud of you. This, for me, is the worst Scream film. And I think for a lot of people, it is the worst Scream film. However, it is still a Scream film. We still get Sydney. We still get Dewey. We still get Gale with a terrible fucking haircut.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
The bangs. But it what it does is it does give a really good sort of look behind the scenes of the movie industry. So how films are made, how people fall in and out of these things, how the Weinsteins are all a bunch of pieces of shit. And I think where this film fails is that it's not written by Kevin Williamson, who did Scream 1, Scream 2, and then he came back for Scream 4.
It's only based on characters.
It's, yeah. So this is written
by... It was directed by Wes Craven.
It was, yes. And, you know, you're only as good as the screenwriter. And in saying that, the screenwriter for this was Aaron Kruger, who actually went on to do...
Freddy.
The Ring.
Freddy Krueger.
He did the Ring remake.
Yeah, right. So that was good.
Which is a really fantastic film. I mean, I can't really talk too much more because he's, you know, responsible for a lot of Transformer movies, but...
Who?
Aaron Kruger.
I thought that was Michael Bay.
Yeah, but he wrote them.
Really? Yeah, they weren't written very well, hey?
No, and neither is Scream 3. So we get the stupidity of the half-sibling, but in saying that, we get the stupidity of the half-sibling, but they've got very similar mannerisms. They've got very similar ways about how they're doing things, how they're fighting.
Wait, what? What are you talking about?
The brother and sister dynamic in Scream 3.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember Scream 3.
Okay, sure. The killer is the brother.
What brother?
Her brother. She's got a half brother, Sydney's brother.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because her mum ran away to Hollywood when she was young and, you know, tried to be an actress. And
why does the half brother care?
Because it was his life. He didn't get the life and the mother and all. He got abandoned.
I've got a half sister I've never met. I wonder if she's going to come kill me one day.
Maybe. You never know.
Probably.
It'll be all right. So, yeah, I mean, to finish out a trilogy, this was just not good.
That wasn't it. That wasn't the end. They're like, we can't stop it there.
Pissed off the fans. But then, like, we don't get Scream 4 until, like, 10 years later.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is a good way to sort of, like, you know, reinvent the franchise and go in a new direction, kind of ignoring that. And I do like that in Scream 6. Scream 5, they give the little reference where Gail's on TV.
That was more than 10 years as well between that one.
Yeah. So Gail's on TV and she's, you know, she's doing this anecdote on her morning show and it's a very quick, she's like, and if I ever get that haircut again, please kill me. I'm like, yeah, that's a nice little throwback. So yeah, Scream 3, it's still Ghostface. I still love the franchise, but not a strong film, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there will be people that will come to its defense.
I never saw the latest Scream.
It was okay. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was indifferent.
It's no Scream 1 or Scream 4.
It's true. It's very true. So what's next on your list?
How's we're trying to do an episode like the best fourth films in a franchise? It's the only one you could do is Scream.
Did I say that these were our favourites?
No, but I'm saying if you wanted to do a fourth one episode, you couldn't do it. There'd be like no films.
Right. It'd just be Scream 4.
I know, definitely know that. Yeah, that's what I mean. There's no... Well, they probably are somewhere, but yeah. My next one is a monster truck. It's like you were saying before, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Mm.
Easily my favorite Halloween film.
Yeah.
Well,
we get Tom Atkins.
Fight me. Like, I know people hated it, and I didn't watch it. I skipped it as a young person who watched Halloween's and shit because I was like, oh, it doesn't have Michael Myers in it. Oh, it mustn't be. Yeah, I'd just skip it. I didn't think, not because I didn't like it, I just went, oh, if it doesn't have Michael Myers in it, why would I be watching a Halloween film?
Yeah, I remember hiring it from the video shop and going home, sticking it in. I was so excited. And
it wasn't what
you expected.
It was like
he just never rocked up. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is awful. And then I was mad about it for so many years before giving it a re-go. And a lot of people did that. A lot of people just shit on it for years and years to come.
Oh, it's not that, because... It was that thing where you're expecting something and you didn't get it.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because it could have been called something else and people would have accepted it if they hadn't labelled it as a Halloween.
Well, it's like when we get the sixth Wrong Turn film and it's actually pretty good, but it's not going to get the reviews and people aren't going to go watch it because it's called Wrong Turn 6. Like if they'd have just made it as something else.
How many times can you turn wrong? I mean, if you turn wrong... Turn four times, you're back where you started. Where are you when you're six? Turn around six times.
I don't know.
But yeah, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, you got, as you said, Tom Atkins, like, in his second best role, because everyone knows Night of the Creeps, is his, in my opinion, is his best role in his horror career.
Yep.
And if you don't know who Tom Atkins is, like, look him up. He's a moustache and a trench coat.
He is.
He's a jaded cop and a jaded person, like in every film. And Halloween 3, no Michael Myers, like just like about this evil Silver Shamrock company, like that I still, as much as I love the film, don't quite understand their motives of why they do anything.
Yeah.
But they basically are creating these Halloween masks, which are the hit that they advertise on television and that, like, when the children wear them on Halloween, they're basically their heads melt and bugs come out of them. And that's their plan.
Mm.
And it's about corporations, like, you know, basically about, like, keeping an eye on big corporations because they'll do horrible shit if you don't, like, keep a tap on them kind of thing. And, we've done an episode on it. It's one of my favourites. It's got that song in it that... The Silver Shamrock song.
Yeah.
I don't know why I liked it so much. I think it was so crisp. Like the version of it that's out here, it looks like a 1970s film. Like it fully does. And like and it, like, it looks like 90s, and so it's got that really, like, full-on high, like, super clear, crisp, like footage, like the film stock, and it's just so nice to look at. And then you've got Tom Atkins, who's like, you know, he's a man out of time as well. He seems like he's in the 70s all the time, and he's in that doing these really, like, serious role and, like, you know, ridiculous acting and yelling, and the whole ending with him just yelling at the phone, so funny.
Yeah.
And just, like, him taking it, like, on this big corporation, basically. It's him taking down, like, the man.
Yeah.
Like, the big farmer, basically. Like, it's a man against that kind of thing with like, you know, weird lasers coming out of shit. And, like, yeah, it's just such a ride. Like, and because, like, it was part of, because, like, what's his name? He made Halloween.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter, like, made Halloween 1.
Yeah.
But he never planned it to be a franchise. No. Saying. He wanted it to be an anthology, like Creepshow or whatever. So when they did Halloween 2, I don't think he did Halloween 2, did he?
Yeah, I think.
What's something to do with it, but yeah, like, not as much.
He's definitely involved.
We got, like, he wasn't into it, the idea. And then when they said do Halloween 3, he's like, I'm going back to my, like, I just want to do stories based in Halloween, like, you know. And, yeah, no one liked it, but I. But yeah, years later, and luckily I rewatched it, and I'm like, man, this is awesome. Like, every scene's funny.
Yeah.
Like, not funny though, it's supposed to be funny. Like, just funny because of how it is. But it's not so shit that it's just a bad movie. It's still a constructed, like, well cut and everything film. So you just get these scenes where, like, they say something, and you're like, oh my god, like, it's like, you know, he teams up with his friend's daughter to go find something, and then ends up sleeping with her. It's his friend's daughter, which meaning it could be she's the same age as his daughter, basically, could be. But, like, it's never really brought up. Like, it's just, and you're just like, whoa, the olden times, eh? Doing it. I mean, he does have a big moustache.
He does.
And so do I now.
You do have a very mighty moustache.
Yeah.
Everyone come to the toy fair and check out Dan's moustache.
Indeed. My Atkins moustache.
Atkins moustache.
My Viltrumite moustache.
You're heading into your Atkins phase.
Yep.
I'm okay with it.
But yeah, so that's my third one.
Yeah, excellent.
I mean, that's my second film about third films. So that's that's one of these diamonds in the rough, where it's the third film in a franchise, and I think it's one of the best. Like, and I'm not a massive fan of Michael Myers. I think that's why.
Mm.
Like, to me, he was just a man that walked around and killed people. I'm not a slasher dude. I'm more of a monster man.
Mm.
If you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, of course. No, definitely. I like Michael Myers, but, you know.
And I like me, against the man kind of thing. Like, you know, the corporations. I'm always going about the corporations. I'm an idiot for that shit. My wife just tells me to shut up. But, yeah.
We'll get you a tinfoil hat. It'll be fine. Okay, so the next one on my list is Day of the Dead. This is 1985, and it's directed by George A. Romero, and it follows on the trilogy of Night and Dawn. Now Day of the Dead.
The Dead series.
The Dead series.
Of the Dead series.
Mm-hmm. So this one is set in a missile silo and a small team of scientists and civilians and a couple of, like, soldiers are basically sort of trying.
Is this the Bubba one?
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. I can never remember between Day and Dawn.
Yes.
Dawn is the
shopping mall.
Yeah, that's the one I like a lot. And, like, because you have, like, that's Savini at his, like, heyday, isn't it?
And he's in it too. He plays the bikey.
He always plays the bikey. Yeah, Dusk Till Dawn.
I was so lucky to see that.
Sex Machine.
Yes. I was lucky to see that in 3D in the cinemas when I was in Melbourne a couple of years back. It was a good experience. But, yeah, so this one, like, you know, there's growing tension. You've got your soldiers who just don't want to be in there. You've got scientists. You've got everyone, and everyone's kind of starting to get to each other.
It's like art. It's like post-apocalyptic almost. Yeah. It
sucks. Meanwhile, like, you know, outside you've got your zombies are coming and it's all happening and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to see what they can get scientifically out of these zombie specimens. And, of course, this is where we get Bub, who is super iconic. He's there. He's got his headphones on. He's learning to talk. He's learning about music. He's basically relearning to be human again, but he's still a zombie. So, of course, when everything goes to shit, because it's a zombie film and, of course, everything does go to shit, you know, we get some great gore. We get some fucking people just getting the, yeah, I can fucking see it. Don't you worry, I can
There's
see
a lizard
it.
On the ground, and Jen is afraid of lizards.
I'm afraid of lizards.
My house has a lot of lizards in it.
It's true, and I can see it, and...
There's a skink on the ground looking at her.
Turn away, mate, turn away. But yeah, so Day of the Dead, definitely, I don't know if it's my favourite in the three. Is there another one? No?
No, they kind of did like the remakes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so and I quite like...
If there is one, it'd be like one of those straight-to-video ones that I just can't, don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. So this one, I don't think it's... I wouldn't say it's my favourite out of them, but it might actually be. Because I do quite like Night of the Living Dead, and I feel that a lot of people still gloss over that one today. It should really be, you know, given a little bit more...
Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah.
Well, Night of the Living Dead's a different franchise, isn't it?
No.
It's like Night of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead 2.
No. Night, Dawn, Day.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and then there's The Return of the Living Dead. And I haven't actually
seen... The Return's like its own one, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's its own one. It's not George Romero, but...
Yeah, that's where I was getting confused. Yeah. Return of the Living Dead is its own thing.
Yeah, so I haven't seen Return of the Living Dead 3 yet.
I found the girl with, yeah, with that.
Yeah, she's got all the glass, like, stuck out of her face.
Yeah, sadomasochistic.
Yeah, so, yeah, Day of the Dead, definitely a top contender for a trilogy.
Hmm. Yeah, I like them. I mean, I like Dawn the most.
Yeah.
Because it's got this real long game feel to it, like.
Yeah, you know.
Like, basically living their whole life. Like, the middle of a film, it's like the end of a film. As in, like, they're living happy ever after, and then it goes to shit.
Mm.
They, like, have relationships and, like. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, and, like, the, that idea of, like, romanticising, could you live in a shopping mall?
Yeah.
That's a huge one. And it's just you and all the canned food and that. And, like, you know, could you do that?
Yeah. Well, the answer is yes, you can, but it's not sustainable.
Well, yeah.
Because there's so many outside factors that can cause everything to fall apart. And those outside factors are just always selfish fucking people who, you know, to be fair, they're all trying to survive in their own ways. But
I mean, if you fortify something, people are like, there's something in there I want
because
it's fortified.
Yeah, it seems safe in there. Maybe I should go.
So what you really need is like a secret underground, like, you know, like a, basically an underground. Something that people can't see. Like a shopping mall is pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah.
Out of all the things. And what they should have done is, like, got everything they needed from the shopping mall. And then maybe, like, over the years they were living there, like, made an underground place where you kind of... Or something.
Something, yeah. Anyway. All right, what's next on your list?
My next one is Army of Darkness.
Yeah, you go.
Theoretically, it's not called Evil Dead Army of Darkness. Or is it? No.
I don't think so.
And that was just to do with, like, the studio not wanting to be called Evil Dead, which is weird. So it's Evil Dead 1, Evil Dead 2, then Army of Darkness. Ash versus the Army of Darkness? No. Because when the movie comes up, you remember, it says Ash versus the Army of Darkness. That's the title, which is weird.
Yeah.
So in itself, it's a mess. But as far as comedy horrors go, this is my favourite third comedy horror one.
Yeah.
Like, better than Return of the Evil Dead 3. We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think, like, Army of Darkness, what haven't I said about it already from what during the episode and every Evil Dead? It's like, it's up there as one of my favorite horror franchises, Evil Dead. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. It was my first horror film I ever watched, blah, blah, blah. I've said it a million times.
Yeah. I was trying so hard with this episode. I'm like, everyone's going to hear it again.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had to be done.
Same stories.
Had to be done.
But Army of Darkness, you know, it came out of nowhere. I remember, like just people who didn't like horror still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It almost has a slapstick Naked Gun feel to it. Like, there's not much gore in this film.
No.
It's more just about the comedy. It's like that Sam Raimi vibe. It fully, he's gone like that full Peter Jackson route. Like, he's just like, let's just lean into that. Like, you know, the fun that we were getting near the end of Evil Dead 2, you know, like, we went from like being like graphically horror with the only humor in it is how bad it is.
Yep.
and the gore, and then to like we purposely put some like funny bits, like, you know, little bits in there, like the giving the finger, the hand, and all shit, like, you know, like, and stuff like that, to like just going full fledged. And it might have probably wanted to be more violent, but yep. like it might have been a studio thing, because if, yeah, they, well, if they had their hands into like, because didn't they want to call it something cool?
I think so, but also remember that it's a different distribution company as well. So I think it's a different, they would have had like, it definitely feels more studio based versus independent. So it's probably, they would have had a lot of like variables to deal with as opposed to, well, I've funded it myself and I've done it myself and here are my friends in it. It's like, well, now I've actually got to answer to someone.
Yeah. And you see all the film techniques in it that he used in like Spider-Man later on and all stuff yeah. like that, you know, that kind of. You know, where, like, just that tongue-in-cheek shit, like, you know, his car gets pulled through the portal and it just so happens he's got a chemistry 101 and, like, all the books in there, like, because he's a student, remember, he's supposed yes. to be, like, you know, to make bombs and gunpowder and then, like, oh, it's, like, advanced steam mechanics or something, and that's how he, like, that's one of the, he makes a steam-powered hand and shit that has, like, robotic... like hydraulic sounds in it, like all that shit is just like, yeah, that's just funny.
Yep.
Like, you know, instead of like the first zombie that's in the film when he's in the hole, instead of it like, you know, bite him and attack him, it starts punching him.
Yeah.
And it does a Popeye roundup, like wind up punch.
It's very Three Stooges, which yeah. you know, Raimi has said so many times that he's such a fan of the Three Stooges. But
well, especially when you get that bit when he's being held down by the skeletons
yeah.
and like he does the whole like putting his hand between to stop the eye poke and then they come in from the side
yeah.
and then it goes into his mouth and oh man.
And then we get such homages from Ray Harryhausen with his, you know, seven voyages of Sinbad and the stop motion skeletons and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff, which I think is fantastic as well.
And all like the off shot, out of shot like voiceovers that they do for the skeletons and shit and just crowds and like you know like yeah like, oh look at taking your eyes on her like those are skeletons yep. like oh she's a sight for sore bones and like just they're all got these like let's get the hell out of here like that's good at the end. And even like when they take him to like the castle, there's all, you know, always hear like just like comments that are clearly just them putting them in afterwards yep. like yeah
and but, why wouldn't you like I yeah would, I would be. If you can get away with it.
Well, if it's a comedy, it's yep. like it's just adding more layers of comedy in there. And, yeah, and I still thought, even though it didn't have the gore in it, as a kid, I still really liked it.
Yeah.
Like the concepts in it, like the bit with the tiny ashes that go inside of him and then his shoulder and it comes out of it and then it's bad and good ash and he chops on the chainsaw and he comes back to get, like, that whole thing, like, just pleased me as a kid.
Yeah.
Even though it was nowhere near as gory as it could have been, I was just like, this is almost like, it's like the fun version of all that shit. There's no terror in this. There was no terror in that film at all.
No.
No one cared.
No. No.
And like, and that's when he full rounded out the Ash character.
Yeah.
Like, to go on from there. Like, everyone's like, you know, there are so many people out there that say like, groovy.
But this
give
is
me
like,
some sugar, baby, or this is my boomstick. They call a shotgun a boomstick.
Yeah.
Because of that film.
I feel that this is where Ash becomes, well, this is where Ash really becomes Ash.
That's what I mean.
Like, but he's like, such an asshole.
Yeah, he's like,
you spend Evil Dead 1 and Evil Dead 2 being like, oh, he's so
and they're good. All over set over 2 days or yeah. something, and he's like ages like 10 years in there. Like, but yeah, he goes from that bumbling fool that, remember, gets stuck under two planks of wood for an entire scene.
Yep.
To like a guy who does like basically like shotgun kung fu and like
yeah
and yeah
he's smarmy. He becomes very smarmy and like
he's just sick of it as well. Like gross. Everyone's like beneath him.
Yeah,
he gives everyone shit because they're not like smarter. You know, they're all like primitives. Like
yes, and he refers to them as primitives the whole time.
There's like Merlins in it, calls him spinach chin, like shit like that, like. And then, like, going on from that, like, the fourth Evil Dead film is clearly Ash versus the Evil Dead TV show, which is, like, all that and the gore.
Yeah.
And lots of it, and just perfect.
Mm.
I keep on saying I want to keep rewatching that because I started re-watching that Stan vs. Evil, which gave me the vibes, but then I realized that Stan vs. Evil just doesn't have that like effects budget and that effects vibe, and because that's Raimi, isn't it? Did the Ash vs. Evil Dead show?
Yeah.
Like, and you can just see it. You can see it's got Raimi money, but it's got Spider-Man money behind it, and it's just all the ideas and anything. Like, they didn't get it. I didn't think anyone fucking stopped them from writing whatever they wanted into that script. Especially with that cadaver scene, which I mention all the time.
You and there's never been in
anything. Like, there's never seen anything like that. Like when you're trying to match up in your horror TV shows, because like, what are other good comedy horror TV shows? There's like Todd and the Book of Evil, of Pure Evil. There's like, I mean, there are ones. There's like, and there's Stan Against Evil. What else is there?
I'm drawing a complete blank. I'm sure there's plenty.
Comedy horror.
Like, yes.
Like Sabrina.
No. No.
Sabrina's like was pretty good.
It was good. I quite enjoyed it. I don't think I finished it.
No, no one did.
But
like seriously, I got like the fourth season where it was the last season, just only watched halfway through because this didn't seem important anymore.
No, like, I think like, as soon as they became a band, I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done.
And it was Josie and the Pussycats, wasn't it?
No. No, but, I think they did maybe bring Josie and the Pussycats into it.
I thought the other members were the Josies.
No.
Oh. I can't remember. It just didn't seem. It almost seemed kiddie.
Yeah. It's well. I think as well.
So the other ones were like it was like heavily based in Satanism.
Yeah.
Like they were all They were still Satanists. They did you know things, and she was like you know I'm good, but like she always did like she caused everything.
Yeah.
She
but still, I think it started appealing to younger people as well, so they had to change it. For that demographic,
usually like if the they other, found usually it's the other way around,
yeah, if they found out that the majority of people watching it were aged between blah and blah, they probably would have gone, well, let's change it up a bit as well. So, you know,
And that did not happen for Evil Dead.
No,
Army of Darkness did not pull it down to be like a kiddie thing. It just went on to be Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah,
where this should have been called Ash versus. Yeah, this could have been. I don't know. There's another name it could have been there. I saw a making of it, and he said what they wanted to call it, and I was like, oh, my God, it's so good. And I can't remember what it was. Like, it just made sense.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, no, you call it this. And it was like, oh, I can't remember what it was. It was something to do with, like, evil, but evil as in, like medieval dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, medieval dead. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, well. M's too far down the list, like the alphabet or something like that. Like if A's at the top of the list and E. Or something dumb like that. Like, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
But that was like the gist of the reasoning. It was just like, or it was saying shit, but like, yeah, medieval dead. It just makes sense. But spell it like medieval, not eval, how it's spelled, but yeah, whatever medieval is.
Yep.
The medieval dead. It would have made, yeah, have the at the start, because it has the at the start of them all. The Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Except for Evil Dead 2.
You had to turn and check your posters.
I had to turn and check my original Evil Dead 2 posters.
Yeah,
behind
Evil
me.
Dead 2 doesn't have a the, but the Evil Dead does.
Yeah, the Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
Mm.
But if it had been the medieval dead, that would have sounded, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And it would have made 100% sense.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And people would have called it Medieval Dead.
Yeah. And then we'd all be happy. But we're not.
And I feel if it had that name, it would have been more violent.
Yeah, probably.
Just for some reason.
Yeah.
It's aching in my, you know.
In your bones. Tingling in my in your waters.
Feel it in my marrows.
All right. Well, the next one on my list is Psycho 3.
Yeah, cool.
This is 1986. It's directed by Anthony Perkins, and it also stars Anthony Perkins. And
it's weird, like the directors that are acting the main role, so they're like, they get the perfect shot acting because they're doing it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I want because I am it.
Yes.
I'm doing what I want. But then they'd have to like stop and go like, okay, so you need to do this and that in between takes. So it'd be weird.
Yeah.
Kind of like Taika, whatever his last name is.
Watiti.
Yeah. When he plays when he plays the Rock Man, so he would have been in there because he was just in a fucking ridiculous, like, mocap suit as well. So he would have been stopped. There's footage of him just like them talking, and he just dresses this ridiculous idiot. Like,
yeah.
But he's tight. He would have fucking, he would have sucked that. I would have loved it.
Oh, yeah. He's so good. So this one, yeah, like I say, it's directed by Anthony Perkins, and a woman, she's like a nun. She leaves her convent and she arrives at Bates Motel. She's looking for refuge, but she kind of resembles Marion Crane. And, you know, that kind of re-triggers Norman to go back down the road, and, you know, Mother comes back and it's kind of him hunting her down. Meanwhile,
what happened at the end of Psycho 2? Is that anything to do with it? Like, how was he just hanging around? Why didn't he end Psycho 1? I can't remember. We watched it.
Yeah,
It was that bit at the end where it was just all exposition and they just said everything, wasn't it? The cops.
Yeah, he goes into a mental institution. And then the second one is him getting out of the mental institution like 20 years later. So this one has, this also has Jeff Fahey, who is in Lawnmower Man. And he comes into this film and he's like this dirtbag musician guy who's on his way cross country, and he ends up like getting a job working part time at the motel. He's just very untoward and sinister and whatnot. So he's trying to do all this stuff behind Norman's back. And you'd think that Norman knows everything because, you know, Mother's always got that watchful eye, but he kind of like slips things through. And this one, as far as a third installment, it's really not that bad. I think a lot of people give the Psycho franchise a lot of flack, but I watched all of it recently. Recently, as it was about last year. And I mean, I kind of
recently.
Yeah. But I forget things. I've got a shocking memory.
I've got the poster down there on the floor. Yeah.
Like, I'll get halfway through.
The OG one.
I know. It's so good. I'll get halfway through a film and then I go, oh, I've actually seen this.
Yeah, Claire does that all the time and I fucking get so angry. Because I'm like, oh, have you seen this? And like, no. You know when someone hasn't seen a film you're like, fuck yeah, let's watch it. And then she's like 20 minutes in, she goes, oh, I think I have seen this. But she can't quite remember it, but she remembers enough to not watch it anymore.
But
she goes, oh, I remember the twist and that's it. Or you know what I mean? I'm like, well, it's not fucking worth watching.
Well, it's the journey. We're on a journey now. You just sit down and just embrace the journey. So, yeah. I think a lot of people tend to skip over this one and, you know.
It's like a lot of people. Are there still a lot of people out there watching the Psycho films?
Yeah.
Have they remade Psycho?
Yeah. Like, and it was recently? Awful. No, not recently. Yeah. Gus Van Sant remade it in like 96 with Vince Vaughn and
the only thing I know about Gus Van Sant is that he's in that Strike Back.
Yeah.
Jane Silent Bob Strike Back when he's directing Good Will Hunting 2 hunting season. And that's just a payer. And he's just supposed to be directing and
he's just counting his money. He's just sitting there. Like, and counting his money. He's like, is this okay? Gus, is this okay? And he's like, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, counting out his monies.
That's a big hard dig at himself.
Well, you can embrace it.
Yeah. You don't see like Kevin Smith doing anything good like that anymore in his films. Like, I mean, like, that's not even that good.
No.
But like, fuck Alex. Alex 3, motherfucker.
All right, let's bring it home. What's your last one?
My last one is one of my favorite films, and it's number 3, so therefore it is the quintessential, in my opinion, horror third film, which is Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yeah.
The fucking Dream Warriors.
We knew
I nearly said Master then, which is number 4, like an idiot, but then I looked at the posters on the wall over there, and I remembered, don't say the wrong one.
Dream Warriors. Well, this is a superior film in general.
Is that Dokken?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get Dokken. We've got, it's 80s. We got 80s hair metal doing the soundtrack and the theme song, which you know I like.
We
I
get a that. Return of Nancy, and we get the introduction of, I forgot her name, the other girl that can control, pull people into her dreams, which is such a cool idea.
Yep, I wanted to call it Anna Paquin. It's not Anna Paquin. It's...
I'm trying to remember the character's name. Kirsten.
Holy. Yep.
There we go. That's fine.
Played by an Arquette. Patricia. Patricia. Nope. Yep. Patricia.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you get that opening, the fucking, you know, to the 80s tune, so her making the pepper mache house. Pepper mache. House, which is like, you know, Freddy's house. It's kind of just got this, because who the fuck makes paper mache shit for a start? People in the fucking 80s. That's like, when has anyone used paper mache? In the last 20 years.
Oh, I don't know.
Never. Claire. My wife, she made a costume. But but you know, like that paper mache was a thing back then, I remember. And like, you know, she's staying up, she's like the no-do, she's drinking the caffeine, she's making the house with the pots, which I've loved so much that we've used it in television's branding a whole bunch of times, the house. I should put it in my video game as well. It's in the antique store.
No, I'm actually designing us a sticker right now, and I'm using it for the sticker.
Using it for the sticker? Yeah, it's because it's great. I really like that.
Yeah.
We should have used it more. I just didn't, yeah. I just didn't like the print. I mean, I like the print, right? It's made it too big. It doesn't matter. Yeah, and then you go from there, and it's the first, like, it's just Freddy. What he became after, it's what Freddy became. Like, that's him becoming it, and he was that from then on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Nightmare 1, well, the fuck he was in Nightmare 1? I don't know. It's just a fucking thing. And then he's a man, and then Nightmare 2 is just a man that runs around a pool scaring teens.
Let's not talk about
Long Arms number 2?
No, Long Arms was number 1.
Oh. Yeah, I can't remember what kills everyone. Which I remember number 1 with The Room. But yeah, and Johnny Depp and fucking that shit. But number 3 is where it all came together, and it was just such a solid film.
Yeah.
As in, you know, it's set in the home for disturbed kids, or what do they call them?
Troubled youths.
No, there's a word for them. It's not a penitentiary. It's like, it doesn't matter. You know, those things where you send kids that are, you know, the parents, and, you know, we know the story by this time of the parents fucked over Freddy and all this shit. So, like, they don't have to get into any of that shit, which is great. You know, everyone knows that Freddy's around, except for these kids. And you've got all these kids that have different, like, problems in the home and stuff. You know, the kid that doesn't talk, the girl that's in there for, like, suicide. Like, you know, all these different kind of tropes of the damage, the bad parents. Like, you know, it's more shit stuff the parents of Elm Street have done to the children. Not only unleashing Freddy onto them, but they've also clearly fucked them up.
Yeah.
And you get all that, and it's just well done. Like, and it has, like, no doubt the most for what are those films? Freddy's not a slasher. He's like a
He'd be more of. He's more considered slasher. Yeah,
he's a considered slasher, but he's kind of like mystical though.
Yeah, but
I suppose they all are. Aren't
so
they?
Is Michael. So is Jason. They keep coming back.
Yeah, like his kills were so inventive in that one.
Yeah.
Particularly, and they tried stuff like that in 4, but it never really hit with all of them in that one. Like the fucking TV where it comes out.
The Welcome to Primetime bitch.
Yeah, that and fucking the worm, the fucking Freddy worm, which was real. Like it was and it looks perfect. And
for me, it's the puppet one where he's like.
Slits his veins and
slits
like.
Slits him up and like just puppets him around.
Yeah, like slits his arms, pulls the veins out and puppets him like. And you can't see what's happening, but you can still see the people, and like they just think he's sleepwalking.
Yeah.
And like, but then you see in him in the like, full gore, and they're making this like twanging, a twanging sound, but it's so deep that it can't be real, and it's like that's the sound that veins make when they're pulled at there, like just shit like that, and like all those fucking like the kills in it are just so inventive and cool, and the setting's cool. And it's paced well, and there's not too many characters in it, and it doesn't muddle itself up. You get it.
Mm.
And then you get this like this team-up of Nancy and Kirsten. Kirsten? Kristen? You know, Nancy's got the knowledge and, like, the fucking, the history with Freddy.
Yeah.
And then Kirsten's got this power to pull people into her dream, so it's just this added thing. And you get that thing, like, and that was kind of the start of, like, you can't kill Freddy.
Yeah.
Like, they still did beat him in, like, this ridiculous way. I can't remember how it was, but because I get them all mixed up. And then, it just solidified the series from then on.
Mm.
And almost like the first two, as good as they are and visionary as they are, it seems like Nightmare on Elm Street starts at number 3.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of people, even today, they still bypass 2, they go straight to 3. Or they bypass 1 and go straight to 3.
Yeah. And then, like, and the one that feels like it the most, did you notice, is, like, 6.
Yeah.
So 6 was, like, Freddy's dead, and that kind of, like, was almost a remake of 3 when you think about it, because, like, the kids are in the asylum, like, you know, the dream. And it's kind of got the same vibes. And,
yeah.
And they really play on that kind of like, you know, when he's in the dream, anything can happen. And that's why I was so excited when they said, we're going to remake Nightmare on the Street. And I was like, fuck yeah. Because the dream stuff, that was the only thing that didn't hold up in them. Because, like, of the effects. Like, they wanted to, like, they did these outlandish things, but because they were so outlandish and thing, they almost always looked a little bit fake, you know what I mean? Because, like, you can't really do, because it's all set in the dream world.
Yeah.
And I was, like, so excited, because, like, you know, they've done some really good dream stuff in films, or how dreams work, you know, they're so quick, and you know, they can just, like, everything seems normal when you're in a dream. Like, it always just, you know what I mean? When
yeah.
Scenes will change on you. Like, basically, scenes will morph in the mid-morph of a scene in a dream. You just accept it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's always happened. And then the morph of what happened before just becomes instant history, as in that's what's happened in the past. It's weird how dreams work. When you try and break them down, you think about them.
Yeah.
Because they only get that. My dreams are images.
Yeah.
So my dreams are images. There's never much movement in my dreams. It's almost like it's still images. But then it's almost like I'm remembering them moving, like when I wake up, like mm-hmm. and in the dream, like it's almost like there's like a thing happening which is like not moving in front of the moment I'm in, and all the movement is in the past of what has just happened. It's yeah. kind of weird.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I often think about how dreams work. Like when I try and like think, like if I remember a dream really vividly, I think, what exactly did I remember out of that? And usually it's just a feeling and a time. Like a time period, like a lot of them are based in certain times in my life. So I'll just get the feeling from like, you know, oh, that was when I was in like year four. Well, and I had that feeling of like that was happening in my life. And that is the feeling that it injects into my dream. And therefore it just creates everything around that feeling of a time period.
Like, yeah, it's liminal dreaming because most of the time like – and
yeah.
Liminal horror is something that we will touch on real soon because I'm very
– Yeah, I watched like a three-hour video on liminal spaces in video games.
Yeah, so like liminal dreaming is like a big thing. A lot of the time you're going to dream it is that mostly kind of that. Thing,
I always get pulled back to these moments. There's a moment that I keep always getting pulled back to, but I don't ever remember it existing apart from in dreams. And yeah, it's right. This real – I think it's just anxiety. As yeah. in, like, it is a manifestation of stress and anxiety that feels like it's a time and a thing. And it's always, it comes up every now and then in my dreams, and I think it's when I'm under stress and that. But, like, it's like it manifests anxiety as a liminal space.
Yeah.
And so I'm in this space and I have this certain feeling, and it's always like a recurring feeling. Anyhow, this is not what we're talking about. Sorry about
it's,
that.
It's relevant to the movie that we are discussing.
It's dream discussions. I mean, I don't discuss dreams all the time. I don't believe dreams mean anything. I don't believe like anything mystical, as you know that. But I do believe that we can look at dreams and try and work them out.
Mm.
And everyone wants to lucid dream. Like the idea of being in control in your dreams, which is what that is in case you don't know what it is, when you like realize it's a dream. The problem with a dream is it's so loose in that I've lucid dream before, but it just goes away.
Mm.
Like you realize it and then the thought or the liminal space you're in changes and you've lost that thought and you've forgotten already.
Yeah.
So people say, I can lucid dream all the time. I'm like, it must be so hard because there's all the things you can do. You know, there's all the stuff you do to lucid dream. Like yeah. They've worked it out, like scientifically. You can do all this certain like breathing and certain thinking before you go to sleep and certain actions. One of them is that you go into every time you go into a room ever in real life, you turn the light switch on and off for the room like that. Therefore, and light doesn't work in dreams. Apparently that's the thing. So there's no light change because there's not an actual place where you are. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
Variation. So if you get into the habit, so it's all habit building. If you get into the habit of turning a light on and off, and then you do it in your dream because you do it so much, and the light doesn't change, that tells your mind that you're in a dream. That's one of the telltale signs. But it's like it's a matter of like conditioning your fucking waking life into having the fucking hard habit of like turning lights off.
Condition my waking life. My waking life is a mess. I'm not going to be able to do nothing.
Yeah. Stuff like digital, you can't see digital. Like you can't see time in dreams. Like if you look at it, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I've never like looked at it, but these are the dream manuals, you know, let's say. Whether it works, but people, it must. I understand like the conditioning, like the conditioning into doing something in waking life, and then when it doesn't happen in the dream life because you've got it as a thing that you do all the time, that's the thing that can trigger it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went on and on.
It's that, interesting.
And that's why I think that, and that's why I don't like cricket.
Well done. All right. Well, the last one on my list is The Exorcist 3. Oh, yeah. How dare this film be as good as it is? What the fuck?
Yeah.
So we did this as an episode last year or the year before. It is directed by William Peter Blatty, who wrote the original Exorcist novel. This is just one killer fucking horror crime thriller.
Yeah.
So it's set 15 years after the original film. It centers around a philosophical lieutenant, Kinderman, who is, he's just one of those gruff, roly-poly detectives. He's like, you know, he's cigarettes and drinks his brown and, you know, kind of like that. And he's investigating a series of murders that contain the hallmark of a serial killer, the Gemini, who is a deceased serial killer. And it eventually leads him to this catatonic patient in a psychiatric hospital who has only just recently started to speak. And he's claiming that he is the Gemini, he's possessed by this being and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of this movie takes place in this institution. We get one of the greatest scare scenes.
Is it the white person walking across the screen? Yeah. The nurse? One it of comes the, out of fucking nowhere.
Out of like, nowhere. It's fucking
like,
good.
Boog!
We get that scene, also the scene where like he's in this room and he's talking and someone's crawling on the roof. Like this film does not, how fucking dare this? Like this film deserves so you much wish, more
yeah,
credit.
Yeah, it should be like its own film as the first film. It
doesn't even need to be part of the Exorcist.
That's what I mean. Like, it doesn't need a tag. Like, putting a 3 on your film is nearly a death warrant. Like,
I'd say so.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like,
well, this is where we start dropping
off. No one's gonna watch a third part of a franchise without seeing the first or second. Someone will watch a second film, though, without seeing the first. And that's fine. You're like, I'll just catch up. Like, it'll be fine. But a third one, you're deep into it.
And if the second film isn't good, you are less inclined to go and see the third.
Yeah, exactly. But and lots of sequels aren't that good.
So no.
But like, I understand why they do it. There'll be people that, like, studios that want to use their IP and, you know, new filmmakers are going to come in. Like, you know, they're young and green and they want to do something. Mm. And, like, you're not going to say no to work.
No,
in
not
an
at
industry
all.
Where you need work.
Yep. And we get Brad Dourif, voice of Chucky, Brad Dourif. He plays the patient and the Gemini killer, and he nails it. Like, he does this job so well playing both characters because it's Brad Dourif, and he knows the assignment each and every time he does it, and he does it flawlessly.
Still to hear that nurse bit, so good.
Yes, yeah, so good. Man, I kind of want to rewatch it now. Maybe I will. But we'll jump into a couple of, like, mentions.
Yeah, honorable mentions, ones that we didn't get into. Ones that, like, you know, we could have, but didn't.
Well, a lot of them I can't remember. So, like,
yeah, Saw 3.
Saw 3, I can't remember that.
Saw 3. Because Saw is like, it's just,
they all meld.
Well, yeah, they're just scenes of people getting out of, like, hairy situations.
Yeah.
And they always, like, and like, I can't remember which one that was quite in. And then there's always the question of, like, is that the one, who's the killer in that one?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Is you know, is it this or that? Is it them? Like, so they all merge together to me, apart from the first film. Which
First two for me are the greatest.
Yeah.
Are the greatest.
And then, because I remember watching them all in one go, like, well, it's before, like, all of them were out. I think I watched, like, maybe there was 4 or 5 out at the time.
Yeah.
And, like, I'd always, like, I watched the first Saw and I was like, fuck yeah, this is great. And then second one came out and I just didn't get around to watching it. And then when they kept bringing them out, I was like, fuck this bullshit franchise. And I wasn't really into horror and it just pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because I just figured there'd be watered down piles of shit. And then I watched them and they're like the Fast and the Furious. They're like this continuity sticklers where they're like, it's all based. Like, you can't watch Saw 3. But you can't start on Saw 3.
No.
And it's like, it's why I haven't watched the latest ones, because I haven't watched a couple before that, and I know to watch the latest one, I probably have to watch them all.
Yeah.
I probably have to watch Jigsaw to understand the latest. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, well,
but
nah.
You don't have to watch Spiral, and that is all that matters.
Oh, wait, is Jigsaw and is Spiral part of it?
Spiral is part of it.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't get through it. I don't know if it is canon to it or if Chris Rock was just trying to reboot it as a spin-off franchise. I don't know.
Yeah.
It failed hard.
Yeah, so this is all. This is all one. Yeah. I mean, it all goes on, like we said, it becomes a franchise after the third one. So
we've got The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, which I like. I like The Conjuring series. It's good popcorn horror. You don't have to think too much. This, however, is where it becomes super blatant. Like, it's throughout all the other films, like one and two. You can see that Warner are really pushing the Christianity and the religious
aspect. What's the guy who made that?
James Wan.
That's the Saw guy as well, isn't it?
Yes.
I just realised that.
Yep.
And he's the king of, like, the loud. Yes. Like, as in, yeah, like, he uses most of his scares are just the loudest fucking noise.
Yeah, which every fucking time will get you? Me in the cinema. Because I've got perforated eardrums. So both of my eardrums, it's all just scar tissue. So loud noises reverberate into my brain and it hurts.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't like a lot of loud noises and I don't like a lot of – because it's always that high pitch.
You're like Spencer in Nightmare on Elm Street 4 when he drops all the pins.
Yeah, not that bad, but
– and then like the hearing aid crunch. Is that 4? It crunches into his head and then he gets the big
– yeah. I think
what is it? The ear
collider
and sticks it – is that 5?
I can't
remember. Now, 5 is The Dream Child.
Yeah, okay.
Which I've watched once.
Sure. They all meld.
Nah. After nah, all. Nothing melds from like, – everything – melds – nah.
Yeah.
I don't think they meld as much as Saw. Because Saw just is the same idea.
Yeah. Again and again and again. But yeah, so The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. It's not the stronger out of the three, but it is still an enjoyable, fun watch. But yeah, they're really not even like trying to hide the fact that they're pushing
Christianity. Has it got Ed and Lorraine?
Yes, it does. You know that I like Vera. Like, she is just a babely babe and holy.
Is that the lady plays Lorraine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them as I was saying before, I really like The Conjuring. Like films, and I like, well, I've only seen the first one, and I like Ed and Lorraine. What's her last name? There,
Warren. Yeah,
as the film versions of them, and but the real versions of them are just like
scam artist
pieces of shits.
Yeah,
but I love them in the film, and I'm like, oh yeah, they're cool. They're like, you know, and because it's a film.
And again, the continuity
as
well.
I like film. You know, I like films. I like the idea of like getting into the story of a film. I don't believe in ghosts and I don't believe in any of this shit, but I like believing in them in the film as what they are. And they're just the polar opposite of what they're like in real life. Like, they're just unlikable fucking people that rip people off and yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah, it's fair.
But yeah, I love those two. And they're not even, they're nowhere near as good looking as those, as the movie versions.
Oh.
How dare they? We got Red Dragon, which is part of like Silence of the Lambs,
Hannibal
Red Dragon.
Yep. This one has Edward Norton. He's playing the detective. And you've got Ralph Fiennes playing the Red Dragon character. And he does it phenomenally. He's just. I mean, we've all seen Ralph Fiennes do acting. We know he can act. He's
aware of it.
We're kind of aware.
We exist in a universe.
But his performance is fantastic, like right down to the dentures that he wears, like changing out dentures for when he's, you know, tracking down women versus when he's not doing that. And then the fact
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's really good. Like, it's less horror, more thriller, but it's still really enjoyable.
As the others. I've only seen the first one. My friend lent me the DVD of Hannibal for like 10 years and then I just eventually gave it back to him to watch it.
Yeah, right.
But yeah.
And yeah, it's definitely worth a watch.
And then we got Sleepaway Camp.
I haven't seen the third one.
I can't believe they even made a second one.
Yeah, apparently the second and third one are actually really, or at least the second one's really good. I couldn't tell you
Sleepaway Camp is, if you don't know what it is, it's one scene.
Yeah.
It is.
We haven't done it as an episode yet.
No.
No, what do you mean, no?
Oh, it's supposed to be pretty easy
to
know. We
are a horror podcast.
Yeah, Sleepaway Camp is definitely something, I don't know, it doesn't seem very, what's the word I'm trying to say now, very PC these days?
No.
Because it basically alludes to the fact that if you're like a trans character or a cross-dresser, you're a psychopath.
Yeah. Which is most films of those days.
Yeah, I know, but I just don't want to have to even talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's hard. We've got The Return of the Living Dead Part 3, which I've, as I said earlier, I have not seen that. You've seen it.
It's funny how I just never, it's always assumed that there's Return of the Living Dead, but like, yeah, there's no anything of the Living Dead before that.
Yeah.
There's no, I just always assumed there was like, and I had never thought about what the first word could be. And I realized there's nothing of the Living Dead apart from Return.
No, which is fantastic. And it's just
I always assumed it was like a Day of the Dead. And then I was like, no.
Well, it's Living Dead. The tone of the film is very different to the Romero's.
It's horror comedy. That's another, I mean, there's another comedy horror one. So the third one I don't think wasn't very comedy horror. It is, but it's not. You know what I mean? It's more like.
I think it takes a, like, it's a little bit darker and focuses more
trying to be your edgelord.
On romantic, but someone it was also the year.
Someone used the word edgelord at me the other day, and I was like, oh, it's perfect for describing so many things. I always, you know, when you're edgelord.
Yep. Glorious. Fucking hell.
And then I popped on there Puppet Master, because I used to fucking love the Puppet. We've never done a Puppet Master. And I used to love them, like, you know, every, like, you know, cover how I introduced the new Puppet, and it was like, and it was just blatant, it was like, introducing Torch, or introducing, like, I can't remember the fucking other names of them, but, you know, and it shows the new Puppet on the front of the cover, like, it's like one with, like, there's like one that's like basically Woody from Toy Story, but he's got six arms and
yeah. And there's 11 of them now, I reckon.
Oh my god!
So
really?
We really should get on it. It's
just
soon.
Do watch them all.
Could do that.
And do one episode. The Puppet Master episode.
Yep. It's in my dishonorable mentions, and it shouldn't be because I understand why. But we've got Three from Hell, which is the third installment of the Firefly trilogy. Rob Zombie took a long time to get to this one.
If you know what the Firefly trilogy is, it's like
House of Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, and
then Three from Hell.
Which
the first two are great.
Yeah. Yeah. But this one, there was a lot of problems.
When I rewatched House of Thousand Corpses, I realized a lot of it is just garbage, like footage that's put in there, as in like stock footage of old horror. And I'm like, you're really trying to, it's almost the transition between a film clip and a film, and it's not very long.
It's a movie. It's a music video.
Yeah.
It's a feature-length music video.
But it's not as well.
It's the best way that I can describe it. But yeah, Three from Hell, it had issues from the get-go. Like, there was delays with the production. Sid Haig was very sick, and he didn't let on that he was very sick. And then, of course, he died. So they had to bring in a new character and go from there. So
speaking of trilogies that happened to, Poltergeist.
Yep.
Now, that's why.
Yeah, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist 3. Yeah, why don't I say that? It's one of my ones. Yeah, Poltergeist 1, fucking love. One of the best horror films, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got about 15 of the best films.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's in my list. Like, Poltergeist 1 is like fucking Spielberg. I don't know, it's Tobe, but it's Spielberg. Like, it's unadulterated. The vibe of how Spielberg makes his films, like, it is that, and everything about it. And then Poltergeist 2 is like, as a kid, I fucking loved it because it just took the idea of Poltergeist and then just like fucking let go of the reins and just went fucking let's go fucking crazy, cunts.
Yes.
He did have that thing. I'm like, why is this happening again? Why are they just not caring? But it had the braces thing, it had the tequila worm, it had like, you know, when he drinks the worm and then he vomits it up and vomits that huge thing up, which is like weird stop motion, whatever it was.
Mm.
You know, we did it. We did an episode on it, I think.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, it's a different film.
Actually, I think we've done all three Poltergeist films.
Maybe, yeah. And okay. And then the third one is like the one set in the building and it's very like.
Yeah.
Like. It's still got the man in it. It's all mirror based.
Yeah, so it's so Carol Ann goes to live with her aunt and uncle.
Yeah, which is like there's no explanation of why her parents aren't around.
It's to hide her from. They're trying to hide her, I think, from the priest, the Reverend Cain,
which they've beaten in the last film.
But yeah, so. Yeah, he tracks her down and is terrorizing her from this apartment building. And it's one of those apartment buildings that is still being constructed and it's going to be like this mega city where you've got, you know, your shopping center,
like
your malls.
Clamp Towers from Gremlins 2.
Yeah, pretty much. But we also get Tom Skerritt in this and we get Nancy Allen, who I love. But yeah, unfortunately, as you said, this one is you know, marked by the death of Heather O'Rourke, who did not make it through the...
plays
Carol Ann. She did not make it
through the... She does make it there in there. Vagina.
Zelda.
What's her name?
Zelda Rubinstein.
What's her name in the thing? It's like...
Tangina. Tangina. She makes it. She's back. But yeah, unfortunately, Heather O'Rourke did die. And so I think the rest of the film, they had to kind of...
There's like,
use a stunt double or
yeah, there's
whatnot,
bits where it's, she's just a doll.
There's a lot that just got missed.
Dolled in.
Like I kind of like the film itself because I like things that are set in a building in like one space because it kind of makes for easier filmmaking. Like I, you know, but
demons.
I think, yeah, demons too. I really just kind of want to think like what would this have been if she wasn't sick and died.
Yeah, different,
could
I assume.
Been. I think she could have been, like, a bit of a star.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Like, she could have...
A scream queen?
Yeah, she could have transitioned super well.
She could have gone into slasher and been, like, the teens and run a whole life through it, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Too soon.
Because she's... Yeah, she probably would have grown up to be quite a babe, so she could have been in the slasher things. It's like a Nancy or something like that.
Yeah.
She might have been in sorts... Might have been Scream as like a...
Yeah, maybe.
As a tack on, like she would have been older, as like an old character, put in there as like a homage kind of thing. But yeah, unfortunate.
It is.
But yeah, that's another one that's like, I don't know why I didn't put that in my list.
I know, it wasn't on the list at all. And I'm because like, we were talking about it before we started recording as well. And I've got a little tab open about it. So I knew that we were going to talk about it. I just missed it.
Yeah, I didn't... Because I started this episode and putting it on my notes, it, like, it had to be a third film that was the best in the franchise, which is real hard.
Oh, no, it's way too hard.
You're just like, no, just like the third
time's
film.
Not always the charm.
Yeah.
So it,
why
yeah.
Why is third time the charm? That doesn't make sense. Like, third time's the charm. Is that just for people who just fuck shit up all the time?
Yeah, probably. But yeah. So I think we'll probably wrap it up there. We'll wrap it up there. And
so that's our horror... Three G's. What do you call it? Trilogies.
Trilogies, or you've got your threequels, whatever you want to call it. I never know what to call them.
A horror franchise, a horror films that have a third film.
Yeah,
that
the made third it, film. In
there's
it.
Also Basket Case.
Which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen Basket Case 3.
Yeah.
So, like, we all love Biel. So maybe that could be another one we should add to our watch list for the... It's hard to do. Yeah, I can Basket Case 2. Be a goodie.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a Muppets film. It's so much weird shit happening in it.
Very much so. So, yes. But before we sign off, we just want to thank our listeners for interacting with us in one way or another over the past fortnight. So we've got our Adelaide Horror Cabal, which is Palace Nova Cinemas and the Bonfire Horror Club, and the sponsors Underground Records, Black Match Candles, Vicious Video, Galactic Video, and Greenlight Comics. We'd like to thank Nether Noose, Robert Thomas, Patrick Roberts, Emma Duran, Ian Westwood, Tsunami Heja, Will, Bryn Phillips, Dion Cracknell, Kate Billinghurst, Chris Franks, and of course our mums.
Who are people who have helped kind of, you know, push our community.
Yeah.
Our online community and real life community. They come in and say hi when we do the Bonfire Horror Club, although I never get to go to them much anymore. I wish I could go to more.
That's all right. It happens.
Yeah.
You're a busy guy and you're a family man, so...
And I'm going to be a bigger family man soon.
Exactly.
When this episode airs, it'll only be about a couple of weeks.
Whew.
Dang.
Interesting. Well, you have been listening to Terrorvision Horror Podcast with Dan and Jennifer. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Terrorvision Pod. Make sure you tell all your friends. We need some reviews. And until next time, may all your dreams be